I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have Robert Nalon. Robert, if you used to read Muscle Mag back in the day, especially the Muscle Mag annuals, Robert was a photographer from the Australia area. And he always contributed articles to Muscle Mag. And he met a lot of great bodybuilders during the golden age of bodybuilding. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Franco Colombo, Sergio Oliva, Serge Nubre, Frank Zane, Reg Park, Dave Draper. So I've been trying to get Robert on the show for a while. And we finally got a chance to connect with him out in Australia. He's in Sydney, Australia. He was also at, of course, the 1980 Mr. Olympia, which I tried to talk to him about that. But he didn't really get a chance to see it from a spectator's perspective because he was taking so many pictures. But it's going to be a really, really good interview with Robert Nalon. And after our interview, I'm going to read an article from one of the Muscle Mag annuals. If you ever collected these Muscle Mag annuals, they were gold. I think there was about five of them. They started in 1976. They ended in 1981. This was from the Muscle Mag annual 79-80. And it's actually got a picture from Robert Nalon on the front cover of Arnold from 1972 in Australia doing a bicep shot. And there's also a shot of Frank Zane and Cal Scalak. And I think this covered the 1978 contest. So Robert has an article in here called Arnold Came to Dinner. I'm going to read that as soon as we finish up our interview with Robert Nalon. And before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, flalternativemeds.com. Tell them that you heard the ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they will give you 20% off your order. All right. In the bodybuilding world, we had some really sad news this week, a few days ago, actually. Australian bodybuilder Luke Sandow passed away. He was only 30 years old, if you can believe it. He just took third at the Arnold Classic last year, and I think he did pretty good at the Olympia. He was a real rising star. I saw him compete out here at the Tampa Pro a couple of years ago. I think it was last year when Dexter won. 30 years old, and he passed away. I believe he took his own life. That's been going back and forth on Facebook. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but it looks like that's what it was. It looks like he was battling some demons. He had two kids, I think a 15-year-old girl and an 8-year-old boy. So that's really, really terrible news. He was a great bodybuilder, really great potential. Big guy who could really pull a vacuum shot and really good shape and symmetry. And he was on a lot of podcasts. I've heard him a lot on Fuad Abiad's podcast called Real Bodybuilding. He was like his co-host every week. Luke had a great sense of humor, a real dry sense of humor, didn't take himself seriously. Just seemed like a great guy. I never had a chance to meet him. But the whole bodybuilding world is really shocked, especially those people who knew him. Such a shame when someone goes that young and especially someone with such great potential. And he seemed like he was a really great guy because everybody who met him really liked him. And I really liked him on the podcast that I heard him on. So real, real shame, real loss in the bodybuilding world. So rest in peace, Luke Sandow, and all my condolences to all his many friends and family and all the fans he had. I know he had a big following, so real, real big loss. What a shame. Hope you guys are doing okay out there with the coronavirus going on. It's really getting to be a pain in the ass. Everything is shut down in this country. Our gyms were supposed to open up this last week, and they still have not out here in Florida. they have different phases where they're going to try and open businesses up. And it was supposed to be in phase one, which was supposed to be like May 8th or last week. And now they said it's not in phase one. So they don't know. It's just like to be determined. We don't know when it's going to be opening up. So it's very, very, very frustrating. It's very frustrating with businesses. I know my online training business has went down, obviously, on my John Hanson Fitness website because people can't work out. So I'm really not expecting people to buy workout and diet programs if they can't work out. And also my seminar, I had that seminar set up for March in Florida, in Tampa, at the Powerhouse Gym. And we had to cancel that because the gym closed down. Plus, everybody was canceling anyways. So it's really, really frustrating for everybody. And I'm just hoping that things open up soon. So I'm hoping you guys are doing okay out there. I know a lot of people are trying to get their workouts in at home or wherever they're doing it. So just got to stay strong and keep going. There's nothing we can really do about it. All right, I did get a couple emails last week. If you guys want to email me, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, I mentioned this last week, if you could go to Apple iTunes and rate the show and leave us a review, I would really, really appreciate that. It only takes a couple minutes. So if you like the show, please go to Apple iTunes and just find us under Bodybuilding Legends, of course. Rate the show. Give us 5 stars if you can, if you like us, and then leave us a review. All right, I got an email here from Martin Stone, who wrote to us from the UK. And he says, "Hi, John, I hope you are well and you are somehow managing to get effective workouts in. I am on lockdown here in the UK, working from home with a hastily constructed gym in my conservatory, which comprises one easy bar and 60 kilograms of plates. It's a sorry spectacle, but it's surprising how inventive it makes you with your training. Well done for pressing on with the podcast during this difficult time. You continue to bring joy to all your listeners at a time when we need entertainment and positive distraction more than ever. I really enjoyed the Bob Gruskin tribute and part one of the Francis Benfato episode before that. Unfortunately, however, I've been unable to download part two of the Francis Benfato interview and either of the two new Jerry Branum episodes from your Bodybuilding Legends website. I get the error message. I appreciate you are a busy guy, and I don't want to pester you with IT queries, but I thought you might want to know about the issue in case other listeners are having the same problem downloading podcasts. Stay safe and keep pumping iron, Martin." Yes, Martin, thank you for telling me about that. I did get a fix. I got a fix that day that he told me. I wasn't aware of that. I guess we were just missing one little link or something on the hyperlink, so we were able to fix that. So thank you for telling me that. I also got an email here from Mark Martinez, and he said, "John, fantastic podcast. Jerry Branum is so entertaining. People who only know Jerry from his newsletter should know he was a darn good competitor and also the go-to guy nutrition-wise for contest prep at Gold's in Santa Monica, and I'm sure at the Venice location before the move. Charles Gaines is a wonderful writer, a wonderful and generous man, and one of the best experiences of my life was being able to spend time at his compound in Alabama for a few days when I interviewed him. The subject of the 1980 Olympia came up on the first night I was there as we shared a bottle of Alexander Valley Cabernet and barbecue chicken he prepared outside on his expansive grill. Between conversations on the publishing industry and his latest book on St. Francis of Assisi, we spoke of Arnold's motivations and why he would enter. Charles had said that Arnold called him prior to the show to make sure Charles was going to go. Arnold had told him he wanted Charles on the judging panel. Charles told me that he told Arnold he had family commitments and they were more pressing, and he wished Arnold well. He said a few days later, Maria called and pressed for Charles to go, and again, Charles mentioned his family commitments and kindly begged off. Charles, in our conversation, mentioned that in retrospect, he was glad he didn't go, given what had happened in Sydney, and that his not going caused a rift in his friendship with Arnold for a while. Charles said in retrospect, it was the right decision. His family came first. I had read Charles's book, A Family Place, and I brought a copy that he was kind enough to sign for me. The book is very honest, and I realized after that evening's conversation that the events and the timeline in that book were what had kept him from flying to Sydney that October. For any of your listeners, I recommend Charles Gaines' book, A Family Place. Always a great job, John. Thanks for the great listen, Mark." All right. Thank you, Mark. And obviously, Mark was talking about the excerpt from the book Pumping Iron, written by Charles Gaines, where Charles was talking about the 1980 Mr. Olympia that Arnold went into, and Charles, as he said, was not there. That was very interesting. But Charles had his own comments on it for sure, and Arnold. Thank you, Mark, for that email. All right. I think that's all I got. If you guys, like I said, if you guys want to email me, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I'd like to hear what you have to say about this interview coming up with Robert Nalon. And here we go. Here is Robert Nalon calling in from Australia. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me today, Mr. Robert Nalon, calling all the way in from Australia. Robert was one of the most celebrated and iconic photographers in the bodybuilding field. He took some great photos of Arnold and Frank Zane during the 1970s. So it's an honor to have you on the line, Robert.
Thank you, John. Good to be here.
All right. You know, we've been trying to get this going for a while, and we finally got you here. So I'm glad we got the chance to talk to you. Well, Robert, let's start at the very beginning of your career. Like, how did you get involved in bodybuilding? What got you interested in that?
Well, when I was 12, my dad took me to a gym in the city. And he was an amateur wrestler in after the war and all that. And he wanted to join me up to get me into the wrestling and everything like that. So I just did weight training. I started very light and just built myself up over the years. And it took a while, but it all paid off eventually. So I was quite happy with my progress.
And did you ever get involved in competing in bodybuilding shows?
Oh, yeah, I did when I was young, but I wasn't in shape. It was just experience, and that's it. I was probably about 18 or something like that. And, you know, in those days, it was trial and error, and we didn't know anything about diet, really. Mm-hmm. You just trained hard and did what you could and just did the best.
Yeah. What year was that about, Robert? When was this, in the 60s?
Oh, God, we're going back to 1963 or 4 or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember seeing your pictures when you were with Arnold and stuff. And you had a good physique, so I could tell you competed.
Well, I wasn't in 100% good shape. It took me 18 years to get into shape with diet and the training and things like that. And after training with Zane, I think I trained with him 2 or 3 weeks, and I learned about diet and things like that. And after he left, that's when I got into shape.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right, because back then, diet really was confusing, right? There wasn't many guys that were really ripped.
I think diet only came in into the 70s, you know?
Yeah.
I think he was probably the main one experimenting with it.
Right. So how did you get into photography? What got you into that?
Well, I started very young. I started off with a Kodak box brownie. When I was probably about 14, 15, I just took photographs and anything and everything I could, ex-girlfriends, me in the backyard, training and posing and things like that. And then it progressed to, I said to my mother, I said, I'd like to get a good camera. So she took me into the store and bought one. And it was a Rolly cord, which was like the baby of a Rolleiflex, twin lens reflex. Okay. And that's when I started to get serious and take photos.
Okay. So you were into photography a lot longer before you were into working out and bodybuilding.
Yeah, well, I was. Well, I was still training then. I was only young, probably 15 or something. I probably had a 15-inch arm or whatever, and in those days that was a big arm.
Yeah, right.
There was a guy in the gym who had a 16.5-inch arm, and I thought that was unbelievable.
right, he was the big guy. How was the bodybuilding scene in Australia?
At the moment? Well,
no, I mean,
I don't know. I don't
young.
Go to any more. Well, when I was young, it was good. They had a lot of contests on. We even had contests between gyms once a month.
Oh, really?
We just have like a squat, a curl, a bench press, stuff like that.
Okay. So then did you start photographing bodybuilding shows? Did you ever get into that, or were you just photographing guys?
Oh, yeah. I used to do that. I'd go to the main shows, the big shows, and just photograph on stage or behind. Sometimes I'd put a backdrop in and some lights and stuff like that and just take the guys that look the best and the winners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were probably one of the only guys doing that back then, right?
Oh, yeah. At that time, I suppose so, because I was probably enthusiastic and a bodybuilder, and I knew the angles and things to take.
Yeah. Yeah, because with the photography, especially with bodybuilding, it's all about lighting and, you know, the angles, like you said. I mean, that makes a huge difference.
I remember Grimmick said once in an article, he had a mirror in front of the, oh, he had a hole in the middle of the mirror with the camera so he could see exactly the pose he was taking.
Oh, yeah. I'd
set a mirror up and I couldn't put a hole in the middle, but I had the camera close to it so I could see exactly the angle I was taking.
Right. Okay. What part of Australia are you from?
Sydney.
Sydney. Okay. Great. All right.
That's the main city, really.
Right.
We've got the opera house and the bridge and stuff like that.
Yeah. So who was the first big bodybuilder you met? Because I know Roger Walker was probably, he was probably the most famous bodybuilder from Australia around that time, right?
In the 1970s. Well, Roger originally came from England, and I think he came in about 1973.
Okay.
And he was quite big then, and I think he'd won the Mr. Britain and a few other contests.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But probably the first really big bodybuilder was Dave Draper.
Okay.
He came out in 67, and I took a few photographs of him. In fact, I took quite a few. And I said to him, I said, how big is your arm, Dave? And he said, oh, between 20 and 21 and a half. And to me, it looked like 21 and a half.
Yeah,
and very
wow.
cut up, very, very separated, you know, great bicep.
Yeah.
Great arm.
Yeah, Dave had to be at his peak back then, right, 1967?
Yeah, you think he won the universe already?
Mm-hmm.
I think he won that in 66.
Right,
but he was just
right.
starting to get into shape. Still a little bit smooth, but still looked good.
Mm-hmm. Now, was he out there doing a posing exhibition in Australia?
He came out for an exhibition at one of the top contests. I think at Mr. South Pacific or something like that. It was on at the Sydney Town Hall.
Okay. Did you get a chance to hang out with him at all, or did you just take a couple shots?
Oh, a little bit, but the promoters sort of kept him away from everybody, and I got to see him quite a few times, but not as much as I'd like to. But he came out again back in 81, and I took him to my gym and took a lot of photographs of him. I was going to take them outdoors, but it was a bad rainy day, and so I thought I'll take him in the gym. At least that's something.
Yeah.
And
right.
I got some good shots, too.
Okay. So who was the next guy that came out there? When did Arnold first come out to Australia?
Arnold came out in 1972. Him and Franco. And it was up in Queensland, a place called Surfers Paradise.
Mm.
And I think it was the Mr. Southern Universe that was on. And him and Franco gave an exhibition. And I sort of hung out with him a bit up there. Took some photographs with him and odds and ends, and then Franco came back to Sydney. Arnold flew back to LA, and I trained with Franco. I took him home for lunch. We went out to the movies, a few things like that.
Wow, that's great. Now, was that when Arnold and Franco were posing by the pool, where Arnold had those blue trunks on?
Yeah, they're by the pool, yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
I think Wayne took a movie. I took a movie. I took a few stills.
Okay.
And then the next time it came out was in 1974.
Now, what part of the year in 72 when they came out, what part of the year was that? Was that the summer before the Olympia or was that after?
Well, that could have been April, or March, April, something like that.
Oh, March or April. Okay. Yeah, because Arnold was in great shape for that.
It was still quite warm. It was our season's the complete opposite of yours. It's
right.
coming on to winter now here, and it's coming on to summer over there.
Yeah, right, exactly. So tell me your impressions of Arnold and Franco when you got to meet them. That had to be pretty exciting because they were probably the two biggest bodybuilding stars in the world back then.
Yeah. Well, Arnold was still a bit smooth in 72, but, he's off-season. You can't expect – you can't be in shape all year round, can you?
Right, right.
And – but he still looked big, you know, and very impressive.
Mm-hmm. Did you get a chance?
And big.
Yeah, I remember seeing that video. I thought he looked great. I remember when I was a kid watching that video, and when he was standing there and he hit that front double bicep, it's like his whole body just exploded, you know.
Actually, I took a movie when he first came out at Sydney Airport in the journalist room, and I got him to nobody's seen this movie. I've still got it.
Really?
I haven't done anything with it. I was thinking of putting a DVD together
you
with
should.
A story and putting that on it, and plus all the other stuff I took.
Yeah, you really should. That'd be great. I'd buy it.
So I got him to pose. He took his singlet off. It was quite a good little movie.
Yeah. What did you think of Arnold when you got a chance to meet him with his personality and stuff?
Well, the funny thing is, he was in a lot of the English magazines. Mm-hmm. As soon as he came to England, they took photographs of him. George Greenwood was probably the number one photographer. And he took photos of Reeves, got back in 1950. That's how far back he went. But he took the side chest shots on the white background. Do you remember seeing those?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, when he was young.
Yeah, well, they were the first really good shots Arnold ever had taken. And they were all put in. George had a magazine called Man's World, and there was another one, Health and Strength. All Arnold photos were in there. And I used to send a lot of photographs of Australian bodybuilders, plus myself, to the magazines. And they would, mm-hmm. in return, they would either give me a subscription to the magazine or they would send me photos. Or George Greenwood would send me photos.
Okay.
And Arnold said to George once, who's that guy on with the photo in the magazine? He told him. Anyway, when he first came, never met him. He said, "Hello, Robert." I thought, I've never met him. And that's because of the photos in the magazine.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then we sort of struck up a friendship from there.
Yeah, because you guys had a pretty good friendship. I remember reading a lot of articles in Robert Kennedy's Muscle Mag, and I thought they were really entertaining, where Arnold would come to Australia and you guys would hang out, and you went into detail about the workouts and what you guys did together. I thought that was really, really entertaining.
Well, the promoter who brought him out was very busy. He was doing a lot of things. So he said to me, "Do you mind driving him around or taking him out?" So I took him to the movies. We went a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Took him into town to buy a dress for his girlfriend at that particular time. Took him home for lunch, home for dinner, down to the gym to train, and got to know him well. We went everywhere.
So, yeah. What was his training like when you guys went to the gym? Tell me about that.
Well, as I said, it was his off season. He was training hard, but not that hard. So I trained with him quite a few times. At one time, we were training twice a day, and in the morning and the afternoon.
Okay.
And I think that was when he was before he's going to enter for the Olympia.
So what did you guys train? How was the workouts pretty much similar to what he said he did in the magazines?
Oh, yeah, he put a lot of effort into it. I remember one time where he was doing heavy squats and chins, and he was a heavy squatter, and mm-hmm. his legs were big. Everybody says, his legs are small, but I saw them huge, you know.
Really?
And we were doing calves, and I think he pumped his calves about 20 inches. And
wow.
They were quite small when he started, and Reg Park said, "You've got to work your legs," and he did.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about all those rumors where they said he had calf implants?
No, I don't know. I looked at his calves and they were quite normal to me. I didn't see any marks or anything like that. And he pumped them up and he really worked hard. Worked hard on them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you were right there. Yeah. You saw him up close, so you would know the best.
So there's a lot of stories going around, a lot of rumors going around about everybody. If you believe everything, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's... people make stories up anyway, just to make an impact on somebody, you know.
Now, you said he squatted heavy. How much was he squatting back then?
Oh, God. See, we're into metrics and kilos and all that now.
Yeah.
But I was raised, my time was pounds and stuff like that. So probably 400.
400? Okay, yeah.
He went up, and that was just a training session.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I saw his legs blow right up. But
really?
It's like everybody. We all have a part that goes down quick. And I'd say his legs were probably the type that would go down quick.
Right, that was one of his...
But they'd come up quick, too.
Mm-hmm, right. How about when he did chest and stuff? How much was he bench pressing and incline pressing and things like that?
I can't remember that much, but a reasonable weight.
Yeah.
Not excessive, just enough to do the exercise, 4-6 sets or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Could have been 200-300, something like that.
And you guys seem to get along really, really good, right? I mean, your personalities and stuff.
Oh, yeah, we got on great, you know, and obviously I was the one that drove him around and looked after him and things like that. And we got on. We were really good friends.
Yeah. And I remember, Robert, you were always in the nice cars. You always had those nice Corvettes. Did you have a Corvette back then?
Oh,
when
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I see over here, all the cars are right-hand drive, like England. I bought a Corvette. It was left-hand drive, but you could only register it and that down in Canberra, which is the Australian Capital Territory. That was the only place you could do it. So I had to drive down there and register it left-hand drive, and eventually I converted it to right-hand drive at a cost. But when I had the Corvette, I used to drive them around in that. And it's just sit in the passenger seat and just be quite happy.
Yeah. So how what do you think of his personality? You know, because now we know Arnold is like one of the most famous people in the world in the history, but he wasn't, you know, he was the best bodybuilder in the world back then, but not many people knew him. So he had all this drive and he had all these goals that he had in mind. When you got
he was very strong-willed.
Okay.
He knew what he wanted and aimed mm-hmm. for it and got it.
Yeah. Did he share that with you when you were talking to him, like some of his desires and his goals? Did he talk about acting at all?
God, when I knew him, he was doing a course, I don't know, a business and administration or something like that.
Right.
And when I was in Los Angeles for a while, I went with him to some talk shows up in CBS in Hollywood. And he was quite good with that in being, you know, talking. And I remember on one show there was Vincent Price and another guy called, I can't remember his name. He was an English actor. But Arnold came on. He's full of personality and he came across well.
Yeah, he always did great on the talk shows.
And one year when he was making, was it The Villain with Kirk
mm-hmm.
Douglas?
Mm-hmm.
We went up to Hollywood and a place called Nudies that this guy made all the cowboy outfits and stuff like that. He made them for John Wayne, Gary Cooper, and Kirk Douglas was in the film for him, with him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a lot of shots there that day. And then we walked outside and he met a director, the guy, I think he's called Hal Needham. He made Smokey and the Bandit.
Right,
so
I
took photos of him and Hal, and if he saw somebody, he'd want a photo, I'd take it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's cool. You were with him back in 79 then, too, when he was making that movie.
Yeah, well, I went to the Olympia in 78 when Zane won it.
Mm-hmm.
I was in 79 and I went in 81. And the one in 80 at the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that
I was taking photos all the time, day and night. I've got a heap of photos nobody's ever seen.
Wow.
Which I intend to print this year and put them on different sites.
Are you going to sell those photos from the 80 Olympia, or are you going to just put them on social media?
I just put them up. I've given everything to my son, and he wants to put some books together.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you really should.
And I bought a lot of negatives from people who were in the audience as well. Cost me a bit of money, but I got everything that you can think of. Color slides, black and white negs, you know.
Wow.
Everything. So
yeah.
I'm keeping them all ready for the right time.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to see them.
And again, you can't judge by photographs. You have to be there.
Right, right.
And you, at that show, you had all the audience had all different stars that they liked. They liked Mensa, they liked Chris Dickinson, they liked Arnold. And in those days, people would boo if they didn't like the person that won or came second or whatever. And that seemed to be a standard thing after that year, even when I went to the States in Columbus in 81.
Oh, that was terrible.
When Franco won, they all booed with that.
So. Oh, God, yeah. Well, since you brought up the 80 Olympia, let's talk about that. Did you talk to Arnold, or did you see Arnold before the contest when he got to Australia?
Well, he was very distant that year. I took my girlfriend and introduced him to her, but he was just preoccupied with pumping up and with the contest, and he just sort of grunted, and that was it. But I just let him go, and I thought, you can't communicate with him at this time. So all I did was just take photos.
Okay.
You know?
So what were your thoughts? You were there at the show, and this is now 40 years later. This is 2020.
Look, I didn't get involved with the politics or who should have won or who should or the placings or anything like that. I picked Zane up from the airport, took him to his motel, drove him to the contest, and drove him back. But he said, he trained in a gym twice a day when I had it, and he was looking good, but I personally think he was a little bit light. And I heard he had an accident a couple of months before.
Right.
And he said, what do you think? I said, Frank, you look great, but you need to be like 10 pounds heavier.
Mm-hmm.
But he did look great. He posed well. He came across well.
Okay.
I would have put him second.
Okay.
That's just my personal preference.
Yeah, yeah. Would you have put Arnold first?
Arnold wasn't in 100% shape. Give him another 6 months, I think he would have blown them all away.
Yeah, I do too.
But he probably made his mind up at the last moment. Nobody knew that he was going to enter.
Right.
So it was a surprise, and there was a lot of conflict there backstage with Mensa. There was nearly a fight that happened with Arnold. Said a few things to Mike, and Mike said a few things to him, and everything got heated, and I thought, oh, God, here we go. Anyway, it was all resolved. Joe and Ben sorted it out, so it was all right.
Great. Were you there backstage when that happened?
Just a little bit away from that, but I heard everything.
You heard everything? Okay. Wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of pictures on the sites, too, the show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So now you saw Arnold in 1974, which was probably his best year, and then you see him in 1980.
He was big then, yeah. That's the shots I took down near the Opera House. I took a hell of a lot that day. I think he came straight from the airport and went over there, and the journalists wanted to interview him, and they took a few photographs as well. And it was a really cold day or cold morning. It was overcast and there was frost on the grass, and he didn't want to take his shoes off because it was too cold.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, it doesn't matter as long as I take the photographs. That's
right.
The most important thing. So I got some good ones. I would have liked to have taken a lot more, but it was too cold and he just wanted to go.
Right. That's 74 you're talking
and I
about.
Did, yeah. And we went over to a place called Luna Park at Coney Island. It was like it's still going. It's been going for 100 years or so. And I took some photographs of him in front of the funny mirror, you know, where they're all warped and you look all different. You look fat or thin or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a couple of shots in the mirror and just standing there.
Yeah, I remember those shots. Those are pretty cool, yeah.
I've probably taken over 100 shots just on that 74, 75.
No kidding. You see him in 1980, and when you saw him on stage, what did you think? What was your initial thoughts?
Well, he looked impressive. And Reg Park was a judge, and he came up to me and I said, what do you think, Reg? He said, well, Arnold's the tallest and he's the biggest, and all eyes go to Arnold. That's what Reg said. So he was a bit bloated at the pre-judging, but at the night competition, he was sharp.
Okay.
He lost a lot of fluid.
And that was all done in one day, right, Robert? They had the pre-judging and night show all on the same day, right?
Yeah, I had the pre-judging, and when that was over in the afternoon, I took photographs of him walking through the foyer, other things. Joe Gold was there selling all his World Gym T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few people there.
Was that also the picture where he's talking to Waller at the table?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Yeah, I wonder what
actually, the girl in the middle, and I had to cut her out and splice the photo together.
Oh, really? Why'd you have to do that?
It just didn't look right, anyway.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you see Arnold on stage, and what did you think, like, when you saw him when he first came out?
Oh, I think I thought he looked good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people were very critical of what he looked like because he wasn't the Arnold they all saw in, like, 74 and when he won the Olympia.
Right.
You know, and, or 73 or 71. I think 71 and 74 were his biggest years. Mm-hmm. 73... he was really cut and looked finished, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
They're the best times. I didn't like him in 75 that much. although he still looked good, but and that was supposed to be his last contest.
Right, right. So you said in 80 you would have Zane second. Would you have Arnold first?
Well, look, that's just my opinion. Everybody says no, but I think I've got a good eye. And being a bodybuilder and going through diet and everything like that, and I know what it's like. And I've been to all the contests in America backstage, and I even said to Zane once, I said, God, Frank is so small compared to these. Look at Cal Skalic. He's got 22-inch arms, and what are you going to do? He said, well, we get out on stage. And being a true professional, he stood right, tanned and cut up to ribbons.
And
all the eyes went to Frank. So what I'm saying, all the eyes went to Arnold in 1980, even though he wasn't the Arnold we all remember being the best. And but he still looked impressive.
Right.
So look, everybody's personal preference, who they like, what they expect, you know. It's just an individual thing.
So if you were a judge, if your personal preference, just your opinion, how would you have placed the top five in that?
If I was a judge, it would be a different thing altogether. I'd be sitting on the panel, observing. Yeah. But I spent most of my time taking photos, so I really can't comment to who should have won or who the placings or whatever. But there are a lot of them that looked great, a lot of them looked good, a lot of them didn't look so good. But it was a tough competition.
Yeah.
They all say, oh, it's political and he shouldn't have won, but I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You could get several different judges and you get all different places. And you can't, there's no such thing. And I don't believe in the judging, the point system, because I believe in the old days, it used to be you'd get, say, 6 or 10 bodybuilders and he'd eliminate them. And, and then you say, the rest step back and he'd keep doing that comparison by elimination. And it wouldn't take long at all. But the point system goes on forever.
Right.
You could judge a dive on a springboard or something like that with points. That's a different thing. But you can't judge a physique competition on points.
Right, I agree.
Definitely not. It's a comparison by elimination. Until you get the first, second, and third.
Right.
And they all go down the line now like 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. Who cares? The first, second, and third are the main ones.
Right. What'd you think of Chris Dickerson that year when he competed in the AD Olympia?
Look, Chris was a very nice guy and everything like that, but I didn't like his physique. He had great calves. His arms were too small. You know, his arms looked to me about 16.5 or something. And most of the guys there, like Boyer Coe, had great arms, you know.
Right, fantastic. Right.
And you couldn't compare the arm. But
but
everybody seemed to like Chris's physique. And I'm just a little bit different. I look at things differently.
What did you think of him?
Oh, Boyer, Boyer looked good, He probably should have gone higher, but... Look, as I said, I wasn't a judge, and I don't know what they pick, what they look for.
Right,
everybody's got their own type of physique that they like.
Yeah.
But as I said, you know, just got to compare them and just all do the same poses and just see who looks the best.
Mm-hmm.
Can't beat Arnold in a side chest pose, can you?
No, or a front double bicep.
Who can equal that pose in all that contest? None of them,
no. Yeah, that's where I thought.
Today they don't do a really good side chest.
No, they don't. That's where I thought he had an advantage because he was so tall and so wide, and when he hit those arm shots or the side chest shot, he just seemed like he dwarfed everybody.
Oh, yeah, and he's tall. And
He
didn't have a big frame. He actually quite narrow shoulders. But when he, you know, expanded, I said, you look a bit narrow. And then he put his arms up. I thought, God, you are wide. And you know, and with the delts, and it all makes a difference.
Yeah. Let me ask you about Mike Mentzer, because that was his last show, and he was a very popular bodybuilder at the time. And he was in great shape for that contest also, right?
Well, a lot of people say the reason he stopped was because of that show, but I don't believe that. I think he was probably had enough, and he'd done enough, and is just ready to retire.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to know Mike really well. And I took a lot of shots of him in the gym. And I took a movie of him as a guest poser when he came out here. And
okay.
I still got that. So he looked quite good. And was nice that guy, too. Very cooperative.
Was that that same year, Robert? Was that in 1980 when he guest posed?
No, I think I took the shots when he came. It could have been 78, 9, something like that. I can't remember.
It's okay.
I have to look on the film, and I've probably got the date on that.
Okay. So you got to hang out with him a little bit, too, when he came to Australia.
Oh, not much with Mike, because he had his girlfriend with him at the time, and he's with her most of the time. I just now and again, here and there, in the gym, backstage or something like that, you know?
Okay.
But I did get to hang out with Larry Scott for a long time.
Oh, okay. That's right. I saw some pictures of you and him before, yeah.
Yeah, well, I wasn't in shape. I'm never in shape when people come out to train with, but at least you got to train with them. That was the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So how was that? What did you learn from Larry?
Well, I did shoulders and arms with Larry, and that was like the highlight of my life.
Yeah, really?
Because I always thought he looked great. But Larry had narrow shoulders, but he had huge delts, which, you know, you didn't notice that much.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me once, he said, I wish I was big again. I said, what do you mean? He said, oh, I said, your arms are over, you're about 20 and a half now or something. He said, oh, they used to be 22, pumped.
Wow.
And some of those shots, when you see him years ago, he looked phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I have a friend that was at the first and second Olympia he won in New York. And he said the crowd went crazy. He said, I've never heard an applause so much, so loud, as with Larry Scott.
Yeah.
In the Olympia. He said, even to this day, there's never been anybody that's really captivated the audience. Larry had something special, even though he wasn't tall, or I think he was about 5'8" and a half. And but he went to the maximum with size.
Right.
Maybe a little bit smooth for this era, but still very impressive.
Yeah. So when you trained arms with Larry, what did you learn? What did he teach you? Did you do a lot of preacher curls?
How to do them properly.
Yeah.
And I had a preacher bench in my gym, but it wasn't to his satisfaction. And it needed more padding and stuff like that. But we still did them. And he went up heavy. And he just put the dumbbells down, picked the bar up, put that down, picked the easy curl bar up. He just kept going. And I was puffing and panting. And I thought, God, I can't keep up with him. And he came up heavy. I think he went up to about 130 with the bar. And he went up to about... 55, 60 pound dumbbells.
Mm-hmm.
But he was doing them easy.
Yeah, yeah.
They were very strong arms.
I remember I was at a one of the shows in Columbus. I forget which Mr. Olympia was. And it might have been an Arnold Classic. I can't remember. But the next day on Sunday, they had a seminar, and they did it at the Veterans Memorial Auditorium. And he came out on stage, and I forget how old he was. He was older. And they had a preacher bench. Right up there with the barbell. And, man, I don't know how much weight he was using, but he was doing it easy. It was incredible. And he was, like, going all the way down, great, great form and everything. And then he pulled up his sleeve and he hit a bicep shot, and the whole crowd went crazy because he still had these huge arms,
great,
you know, at 50
arms.
Years old. Yeah.
Great arms. And when I took the photos of him and trained him, he was 40.
Okay.
He still looked good. He had great shaped legs. But, see, when he trained at Vince didn't believe in squats.
Right, right.
And... His legs were really good, but I thought if Larry had done squats, how much better could he have been?
Yeah, yeah. He really didn't see his potential.
You know? So the shape was there. He just needs a little bit more size. And I remember seeing a photo with him and Tom Platz together in the gym.
I saw it too, yeah.
Was huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And, you know? Actually, I thought his thighs were too big.
Right, yeah.
But that's what he wanted to do. That was his...
His forte.
Anyway.
Yeah, that was the best thing.
I went out with Tom once when he was in Sydney. We went out to dinner. And I probably had a few drinks in me, and I grabbed his arm. I said, Tom, you got to do something about those arms, getting them bigger. And he never spoke to me all night after that.
Oh, really? That's funny.
I thought, well, when you drink, you say, they say, oh, what is it? What's that saying?
Takes away your inhibitions.
Children always tell the truth.
Right.
So I've probably had too much to drink that night, but anyway.
Right. What was it like hanging out with Franco? You said you hung out with Franco in 72 after Arnold went back home.
Well, Franco was okay. He's a little bit quiet and very strong. Okay. Very strong. Mm-hmm. I was strong, but I wasn't as strong as him. He was just phenomenal. And he was doing press behind neck with about 230 for about 8 or 10 reps or something.
Wow.
I took a few photos with him. I was a bit smooth at the time, but he looked great. I didn't like his type of physique. I thought his arms were a little bit short, and he had great lats and a great chest.
Right.
You know, and he won a lot of titles, and he did look good and things like that. He was a nice guy.
Yeah.
And we got on well.
Yeah. Well, that's great that you you had such a great experience hanging out with these legends of the sport. And not only did you get to meet them, but you got to work out with them. You know, you got to hang out with them, go to the movies with them, go eat with them, go have a drink with them. So that had to be a great experience.
They're on my territory. So
yeah,
I was lucky to chaperone them and take them around and show them the sights and things like that. I took Arnold to a few parties and like barbecues and introduced him to some girls and things like that at that time. So he had a good time. He had a good trip.
Yeah.
Every trip he came, he had a good time.
Yeah, that's what
I
it seemed like.
Who else I took a lot of photographs of? Serge Newbery.
Oh, okay. Yeah, tell me about that.
I think Serge got better as he got older.
Yeah, I think so too.
You know, I took shots of him when he was probably 40, something. I took him on the beach, in the gym. Again, there's a lot of great shots I haven't printed yet. So this will be the thing, getting in the darkroom and printing all the old shots that I never got to do. I had Bill Pearl come to my gym once too. I picked him up from his motel and took him to the gym. I did a painting of him when I was young, and I got him to sign it. That was hanging in the gym. And I took a lot of photos of him at the desk and next to the preacher curl bench and a few odds and ends, so they were quite good.
Yeah. How old was Bill when he came into Australia?
Well, Bill would have been 50 or so.
Yeah, okay.
He came out in 80. He was going to be a judge for Olympia, but he bowed out.
Right.
And then he came in 81 and gave an exhibition. And I took a movie of him. It was a great movie. And I sent it away to a friend of mine. I never got it back.
Oh, man.
Should never have sent it. That's it.
No, I know.
That's one thing I have regrets about. But he looked great, Bill, in really top condition.
Yeah, yeah.
Arnold was the MC, and he was Bill came on, did his routine, and got a great applause, and he looked fantastic.
Yeah, so he was, what, 51 at that time?
Also, in 80, I used to pick Reg Park up, Joe Gold, Danny Padilla from their motel, bring him back to my gym and train. They trained with a lot of guys. Reg was a very nice guy, very humble, and he'd help people. Everybody liked him.
Yeah,
even in America, when he did his tour there, everybody said good things about him.
Yeah, yeah, I got a chance to meet him too a couple of times, and he was such a great guy, such a gentleman.
He told me back in 1953 that he did a 500-pound bench press, but it wasn't official. And I think a couple of weeks later, Doug Hepburn, the powerlifter, he did a 500, and it was official.
Wow, so that's
Reg
amazing.
Reg did it first.
Man, unbelievable. Especially for back then, to be that strong.
I've met a lot of strong guys. There was a guy in Sydney, Russell Townsend, his name is.
Uh-huh.
He was the strongest fella I've ever met in my life. Russ Warner came out here, the photographer, and he came along with me. It was in City Gym in the city. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, Russ is going to do a 500-pound press behind neck seated. I thought, nobody could do that. And you know what? He did it.
Wow, 500 pounds?
The weight came down slowly, and it got to the shoulders. It was a full right down, and I thought, he's not going to get that up. And he just pushed it up really slowly, and he completed it. And Russ said to me, he said, I saw a guy in Hawaii do a 420, and he said, that's the strongest I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
Now, I was doing calf raises in there one night, and Russell was doing press behind neck standing, mm-hmm. and he was just banging it out like it was nothing. And I added the weight up, and it was about 335 pounds. And I said, how many you do of those, Russ? He said, oh, I don't know, 10 or 15. Wow. I said, God, I'd be happy to do one.
Yeah.
And he'd pick the 100-pound dumbbells up and do curls with them. They were 25 pounds or something.
Wow. What was his name again?
I took some photos of him. Again, I haven't printed them. I have to print them and put them on. He was about 5'10", and weighed probably about 230, something like that.
Okay. What was his name again?
They're extremely strong. Russell Townsend.
Russell Townsend, okay.
Actually, he took up professional boxing. And the first fight he had, he dislocated the guy's shoulder and had to take him out on a stretcher.
Oh,
and he never lost a fight. And Billy,
really?
Who owned the City Gym, tried to team him up to fight with Mike Tyson, but it apparently didn't come on. And he said, look, Russ, you'll probably get $1 million out of this, whether you win or lose.
Yeah. But, wow.
Like, he was given a name in the boxing as the White Rhino.
Yeah. Wow. What's he doing now?
I don't know.
I
haven't heard from him or seen him for years. So it could be anywhere.
So of all these...
It was in the 90s.
Of all the bodybuilders you met, Robert, which ones were the most impressive, do you think, when you got to hang out with them?
Well, Arnold was.
Arnold.
Serge Newbay was. Serge Newbay, he was fantastic. Very shapely and muscular.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a nice guy. A lot of people said other things about him, but then again, you could be away from home and not happy and in a bad mood, and you come across not too good, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I've been through that. You probably have too.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to train with him at all, or did you just take pictures of him?
A little bit, yes. I trained with him for a little bit, and he never used really heavy weights, but
he did a lot of high
mm-hmm. reps. And I remember once, this is a good, I just remember this. I remember with Frank Zane, we were going to do leg extensions, and he put these weights on the machine. I said, that's not much weight, Frank. You've got to have heavier than that. Oh, that's okay. I said, okay. He said, you go first. I said, how many reps? He said, 75. I said, what?
Wow.
He said, you want cuts in your legs, don't you?
75 reps, wow.
And then we did donkey raises, calf raises. I said, how many reps, Frank? He said, 75.
Wow,
I got
really?
About 60.
75 reps.
I thought it was going to collapse.
Oh, man. That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah. And he got into shape with diet and training in 2 weeks. Reasonable.
2 weeks.
I'm not talking about competition shape, but he'd come out from L.A. and it was winter here, or winter there, I think it was.
Yeah.
And anyway, sat in the sun, got a tan, and trained every day and stuck to his diet. I used to go over and have a beer with him at the hotel up just across the road from the gym. And we used to get high-low beer. It was high alcohol, low carbohydrate.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they make that anymore. I'm not sure.
No, I never heard of that. What was Frank's diet like? Was it just pretty much low carbs, high protein, and that's how he got in shape so quick?
Yeah, yeah. He used to go by that Atkins diet revolution,
mm-hmm.
high protein, low carb. And
okay.
We went into town once what do they call a buffet? And we used to call them smorgasbords. Anyway, he said, go out and get a plate and put on it what you normally eat.
Mm-hmm.
So when I brought it back and I started eating it, he said, well, look, you have half that. You've got too much. And you've got to stick to a diet. And if you want to get into shape, that's what you got to do.
Okay.
So after that, I went, did his diet, and I got into shape. It took me a while. Hmm. The diet's the training's the easy bit, so diet's the hard bit.
Right, right. And what was his training like, Robert?
Very hard.
Hmm, okay.
He trained very hard and used reasonable weights, not real heavy, not real light, just enough to when you finish the training, you're stuffed. You know, mm-hmm. He did train hard.
Okay.
And some things he'd do heavy, but he was just getting back into shape and just for the exhibition. I think it was the Mr. South Pacific. I think Roger Walker won that. And Frank was very professional, looked great, posed well, came across good.
So you said he trained very hard. Did he just move fast, like just moderate weights, but he moved fast during the workout?
Yeah, moved fast. And, well, that was the whole thing. Same with Larry Scott and Arnold and all that. Move fast. Put it down, go on to the next. Not much rest.
Right, okay. That's interesting. So you got to see Frank when he won the Olympia, you said, right, in 78?
Yeah, I was there in 78, yeah.
Okay.
And 79.
Yeah. Okay, you saw both of them. Okay. Yeah. What did you think of 78? I was at that contest, too. There was a lot of great bodybuilders in there. You mentioned Cal Scalak, and he was a popular bodybuilder back then.
Yeah, it was a good contest, that. And I was backstage. I took a few photos, but not that many. And I think 81 I took more photos than anybody than I'd taken before. And I took some with Joe Weir and Ben and Ricky Wayne in the audience. And backstage, I took a hope when Franco was in it, and Tom. I took some of Tom Platt's in the mirror. They'd been put on. Color swaps.
I remember the
black and white.
Couple of those shots you took of Tom backstage. Those are some of the best shots I ever saw of him.
Oh yeah, he looked great that year. I would have liked to have taken more.
Yeah.
But, you get. I suppose they get a bit flustered and concentrating on the contest. You can't sort of invade their privacy too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And Danny Padilla looked great that year too.
Oh yeah, Danny looked good. I said that in 81. That's right. When I went over, I trained at Joe's gym, the World Gym in Santa Monica, and I said, Joe, who do you think will win the Olympia? He said, well, the two most improved bodybuilders this year, Tom Platz and Danny Padilla.
Mm-hmm.
He said, they're the two best. He said, it's eye out of them.
Yeah, he was right.
But anyway, Tom looked fantastic. I thought Tom should have won. Danny was
too.
A close second. He looked pretty good. Very good.
Excellent. I agree with you. I think Tom should have won too. I was at that contest too. And I think Tom should have won too.
They all booed and went and Franco won. And I had a big argument with Arnold a year before, and then I was there, and Franco came backstage, and Arnold said, what did you think of Franco? Doesn't he look good? And I thought, I had to say, yes, he does look good. I couldn't say anything else. I had to keep my mouth shut.
Right, right.
And he did look good, but he, I thought Tom looked better.
Yeah, he just didn't have the legs. I thought his upper body looked great. Yeah, Danny looked amazing. So you got to hang out with Danny Padilla too when he came to Australia.
Well, in the 80 Olympia, all the guys, a lot of them, most of them trained in my gym.
Okay.
Danny Padilla, I used to pick, I used to pick Reg Park up, Joe Gold, and Danny from the motel and bring them to the gym and they could train, and then I'd drop them back.
Okay.
And I got to know that. I took a photo, but I was going through a bad relationship at the time and I wasn't really in shape. And I sat on a bench with them and I had this T-shirt on. I didn't look good at all, but I should have had a short sleeve shirt on or something. Would have looked a lot better. But at least I was with them, you know. And and you learn a lot from everybody.
Yeah. How about Sergio, Robert? Did you ever get a chance to see Sergio out in Australia?
Yeah, well, I first met Sergio when he came out in 1974, when he's up in Queensland, another place called Surfers Paradise, where Arnold was. Mm-hmm. But it was a really bad weekend. It was raining, pouring, and not many people turned up at the contest because of the weather.
Yeah.
It was continuous raining, never stopped, all weekend.
Oh, and wow, that's
then
a shame.
He came out again in 1981, and I picked him up at the airport, took him to his hotel, took him around, took him out to gyms and things like that, and he gave an exhibition in one place. And when he did the most muscular, one woman in the front row in the audience screamed. It was too much for her. And when I was supposed to meet him in the hotel, he came down in the elevator, and he had a headband on. He had a short singlet, a pair of shorts and a pair of socks pulled up to his calves. And when the elevator doors opened, the people in the elevator couldn't believe. He looked like something from another planet.
Right.
And he walked out and said, "Hey, baby." And you had to see Sergio in the flesh to really appreciate his physique.
Yeah, exactly.
And in those days, there was only Sergio and Arnold. And that was it.
Yeah,
and
right.
Of course, Bill Pearl and Larry and, you know, but in the contests.
Yeah, I say the same thing about Sergio. You had to see him in person to really understand how great he was, you know.
Yeah, and he was a nice guy. I got on well with him. And he had an unusual sense of humor, which I got to.
Uh-huh.
I made him laugh once and he fell on the floor. And, he said, "Get away from me, get away." You know, and he called into his dressing room and locked the door, wouldn't let me in.
Oh, really? So, that's funny.
Just go away. So I've been very lucky, in a way. I've met a lot, trained with a lot, learned a lot, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I've been to America quite a few times, and it's, you know, so if I picked a place to live, it'd be there. See, we're across between England and America. And
okay.
I think we're probably closer to America than England. Like,
yeah.
If I picked the place to live, it'd be there.
Okay.
There were so many good places.
Yeah.
And the people are nice. They're very hospitable, very friendly, and I've had great times. Great
mm-hmm.
times there.
Where have you visited in America? Just California, or have you gone to other places?
I've been all over.
All over?
I've
okay.
been to San Francisco, up to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Over to Florida, to Houston, Phoenix.
Okay.
Oh, God. I just can't remember. I called in New York once, but I didn't. I was by myself, and I thought, I don't want to buy yourself. It's better if you've got a girlfriend or something just to
mm-hmm.
stay and tour, you know? So I
yeah.
just flew out. But I've been to quite a place, New Mexico, in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
God, I have to sit down and think. I've been everywhere in America, but nowhere in Australia. I've only been to...
Oh, really? That's wild.
Up to Brisbane, which is up north, down to Melbourne, which is south, 500 miles either way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as far as I've gone.
Yeah.
But most of my life has been in Sydney.
Okay, yeah.
I said to Russ Warner once, I said, you know, when I was young, I wanted to go to Venice Beach and train. Mm-hmm. And the place we were at that time where the gym was Coogee, called Coogee. It was a little area, beach area and suburb and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, why would you want to go to Venice Beach when you got one of the best beaches in the world here? And I
right.
said, well, you really don't appreciate your own place.
Yeah, you don't.
Until you go somewhere else. And
mm-hmm.
I was a bit disappointed when I first went to Santa Monica, but you get used to a place. And
yeah.
That was like the mecca of bodybuilding.
Right, right.
I trained in the old muscle pen on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have been 78 or so.
Okay.
And, I think now you've got to pay, haven't you?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If I went to Santa
anymore.
Monica again, I probably wouldn't recognize it's probably changed a lot.
Yeah, it
like
has.
Everywhere, people and places.
Right, right.
I think I lived in a good era, you know, with music,
mm-hmm.
toy building, cars, everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Great
you lived in the best era in the 1970s.
Too.
Yeah, they were,
yeah. I think you had to live in it to appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, that's the point of my whole podcast here is I'm trying to celebrate that golden era of bodybuilding. And I think, like you said, I think the 70s and the 80s, those were the best times. Those were You got to hang out with all these great bodybuilders, Robert, so you're really lucky.
Even the 60s was a good time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when Bill Pearl came. He was big as a house. Larry
mm-hmm.
won his contest.
Yeah.
First came on the scene. Draper, all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Different time altogether.
Yeah.
Great
yeah,
time.
Yeah, it really was. Do you get to see any contests anymore? Do you go out to any of the current shows?
Well, I can't be. I've seen a million contests. I couldn't be bothered to go and see another one. And it's a different time now, a different body build. The standard
yeah.
has risen a lot, and they all look some. Last time I went, the Masters looked unbelievable. I thought, God, you couldn't. They look fantastic.
Yeah, they do.
And they're in
yeah.
their 50s or 60s, and
I know.
They look incredible.
Yeah,
the standard has risen. So much, and
I've noticed that too. The older guys are getting in better shape as the years go on. It's amazing.
Oh, they are. I saw one on the internet today. He was 73 or something, and he looked fantastic.
I know. It's unbelievable.
He must be very strict with his training and his diet and everything. I thought, I don't think I could do that.
Right. I know.
But anyway, he's right into it, and he looked great.
Yeah, there's like no age limit now. It's like you just keep going and going.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like years ago, if you were 40 and you wanted
right.
to compete, you were too old.
Right,
I remember
right.
Oscar Heidenstam said to Reg Parker when he went into the universe, he said, oh, Reg, you're getting on. You're a bit old now. You're 40. You're over the hill.
Right.
Now even 50's young.
Yeah, I know. I remember when Bill Pearl won his last universe, he was 41, and that created a lot of people who were freaked out about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Times have changed.
Yeah, for sure. Do you like that era better, Robert? The 70s and the 80s? Do you like the way the physiques look better? Because like you said, times have changed now and the standards have changed. The guys are much, much bigger now.
Yeah, well, I don't know what it's like in the bodybuilding game now, but we were all very friendly and we all talked to each other. We're all good friends. And, you know, we didn't look that good as compared to today, but... you know, like when I got into shape, I looked all right, and I thought, well, and then you look at all the body, I thought, God, there's 100 bodybuilders a lot better than me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can only do the best with what you got. That's all
yeah.
you can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And just some look better than others. And it's the same with the contest. You could have better shape than the guy that wins, but the guy could be more muscular,
mm-hmm.
stand out more.
Yeah.
You know? It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Are you still training regularly? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I still train 4 days a week, and I'm still training heavy. So I'm really still into it like I was when I was younger. So
what are you weighing now?
About 225.
Oh, that's a fair weight. That's a good weight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm still squatting like 300 pounds and doing bent over rows with 275. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
How old are you now, John?
57.
Oh, I'm still young.
Yeah,
it is.
You.
It is. Look, 50's young, 60's young.
Yeah,
really. Believe it or not, it is. And when the older you get, and people say, oh, I'm getting old now. I said, no, you're not. You're
right.
Really young.
Right, right.
So never give up. Just keep going.
Yeah, it's really like your mindset, right? It's just how you think about it.
And the good thing is with training, with weights and machines and things, it keeps you young.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So I can go in the gym and do a workout. It could be the same workout I did in 1964, only not the same weights.
Right.
But when you leave the gym, you feel great. You think,
right.
Well, I've done a good workout and I feel good. And I train sometimes one or two or three times a week. Depends what I can fit in.
Uh-huh.
Even once a week, I still feel great. Doesn't matter. Not the old 6 days a week like I used to do.
Right.
You know.
And how old are you now, Robert?
Well, I'll be 75 this year. I'm an old guy now.
Wow, 75. 20, okay.
25 in the mind, just don't look in the mirror.
Right, right.
That's the way you got to look at it.
Absolutely,
and
right.
As long as you've got your enthusiasm still there and
yeah.
you love life and you can do things, you've got a lot of interests or something like that, you've got a couple of friends you can you know, speak to, and
yeah.
that's another thing. The older you get, the less friends you've got.
I know. That's a shame.
Friend who died recently, he was 84 and he still trained in the gym.
Really? Wow, that's great.
Yeah. He fell off the bench once and I said, he said, as long as the young kids didn't see me fall off, that's the main thing. So he said, I just got up quick and kept doing what I had to do.
Right, right. Are you guys being affected by that? By that coronavirus out there in Australia?
Look, it's everywhere. And the thing is, there's a shutdown here too. I went up to the local place where I live, and it was empty. It was like a ghost town.
Mm.
But then again, with that, you've got to keep away.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're going to open things too early.
It seems like it, yeah. They're starting to do that
out
here in the
United States.
And then
it'll start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there's a nursing home for aged care. And I think 16 people have died in that home.
Oh, wow. And, yeah, it's crazy. We've never seen anything like this.
There's just so many stupid things that are happening in that. But people can't stay inside. They can't occupy mm-hmm. their time or their mind. They've got to get out.
Right, right.
I'm, oh, look, I could sit and stare at a wall for hours. It wouldn't worry me. But people like to be active and do things. And
yeah.
I remember once they opened the beach. They closed all the beaches down here. They opened the beach. People flocked in thousands.
Yeah.
They had to close it again.
Wow.
They'll find a vaccine and...
Yeah.
It'll be gone.
Yeah, they've had people locked up out here for like 2 months, and now people are going crazy. They're ready to like get out, you know, and they're protesting now and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah.
What can you do? They can't stand being locked up, and jobs.
No.
It's going to affect the economy. The government is giving out money, stimulus packages, and they can't do that forever because you can't keep printing money and giving it out.
No. Mm-mm.
So it's got to end eventually and slowly get back into things.
Yeah,
and all the gyms are closed here too.
Out here too.
Restaurants, everything. Movie theaters, same thing as over there.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be closed just a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm. Give it That's a bit what it seems time. Like. Yeah. When do you think you'll come out with this book or the DVDs or whatever with all these great photos that we've never seen before?
I've just got to see my son. I've given him everything. I said, look, he can have all the photos and things. Just... to help you pay your bills and things like that. And
okay.
I think he went to the States a couple of years ago at the Olympia, or Arnold Classic, I think it was, in Columbus, and sold a few things, but I don't think he had a good spot, so he didn't do too well.
Okay, gotcha.
He might go back again, and he'll have new stuff this time.
Yeah.
New old stuff.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
You can't beat a good black and white photo.
I'm sure you got some great stuff, so I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
And I'm good at printing now. See, I can print photographs. I'm good at printing. I got one here, Tom Platz. I took a black and white, 35mm. I've taken all different formats, 2.25, 6x7, 5x4, all different. But if you get a good neg, it doesn't matter what size it is, you can get a good print.
Right, okay.
Too bad you haven't got a site. Have you got a site?
Yeah, we've got a bodybuildinglegendshow.com. That's our website.
I could send you some photos.
Oh, yeah, please do that. I'd love to put them up. That'd be great.
Well, send. Look, I'm not into computers. My son is.
Okay.
No, I'm not. I'm just a basic person. But if you sent me a friend request, I could send you some photos.
All right. On Facebook?
Do that. And... Because I've got thousands. I said to Artie Zeller once, sitting on Venice Beach, I said, Artie, I've got more photos than you. As a joke, you know. I think I upset him. But he was a good photographer. Very good photographer, Artie. And he was at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, wasn't he? Man.
Took some great shots.
Great shots. Classic stuff. I know, unbelievable.
I think he ended up with a Hasselblad, 2.25.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. I heard Arnold bought all his negatives.
Yeah, I heard that, too.
And I heard the amount he paid for them, too, but I won't say it.
Okay. Yeah, it's too bad, also, we never saw all that footage from Pumping Iron, too. You know, they shot, like, over 100 hours of footage, and I wish we could see that.
Yeah. Well, look, even all these movies they take, like the comeback that was taken at the Opera House.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There was a lot of stuff spliced and cut and put together, and all the stuff thrown on the floor.
Now, I know.
All the stuff that's thrown on the floor could be put together and made another movie.
Oh yeah, I know. Can you imagine?
I heard some guy bought all the offcuts from the contest, paid him the money, but just didn't do anything with it.
Man, it's at this time, you know, we've got so many avenues where you could sell DVDs, or you know, even just put it on social media. You could advertise it so well. God, you know, you can really make some money off that stuff.
Oh, and in 1980, CBS was there making a documentary. And
great.
I got photos of Bill dressed in a tuxedo and commentating and doing things. But
they never showed it.
We never heard anything about it.
I know.
And they probably still got it somewhere in the archives.
I know. I've been wondering about that for years, I'm wondering where is the footage.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great to put together and put out on TV or even in the movies?
Yeah. Yeah, because
I think it was all shot on film, too. On film, not
right.
Video and all that was very early stages.
I talked to Boyer Coe, and he said there was only like 5 people that saw that footage. It was like him and Wayne D'Amelia and Chris Dickerson and Dennis Tenorino. I think that was it. They all went to New York, and they saw it in the CBS studios, but no one else has seen it. So God,
they had cameras everywhere.
Yeah, did they?
I got in the way of one of them, and they were shooting a lot of stuff, a hell of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's still available somewhere.
Somebody's got it, right?
As I said, probably as I dig it out and put it all together and put it on,
I know.
It'd be great. I guarantee a lot of people would love to see it. Love to see it.
Right. They got this documentary going on now with Michael Jordan and the Bulls from, 20 years in the 1990s. And it's great stuff.
Yeah.
I've been watching it every week, and it's just, it's such great stuff. So, yeah, we'd love to see that with the body.
A lot of people like the old stuff.
Oh, yeah. When you see these people when they're in their prime, too, you see Michael Jordan at his best. It's just so exciting to see it,
Yeah. I guarantee there's a lot of stuff out there. I like to look at all the old cars, all the old American cars in the 60s and, the 70s. Are still popular.
Yeah, yeah.
And they build them up and as good as new. And, of course, they can do anything today with technology.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, yes, it would be good to see that.
Oh, yeah.
You have the 1980 Olympia unseen.
Right. Yeah, because there's still...
That'd be great.
Like I said, it's been 40 years since that contest, and people are still really interested in it. We talk about it all the time on this podcast. We talk about the 1980 Olympia all the time.
Keep going on about it.
Yeah.
And people have never been born then.
I know. It's got to be the most talked about Mr. Olympia ever.
Yeah, most controversial.
Yeah, for
one
sure.
One that's been put, that's had, but probably because Arnold entered at the last minute and he won.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Everybody jumped up and down, said he shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But anyway, as I said, everyone's got their favorites.
Yeah. Well, Robert, it was great talking to you. I'm glad we got a chance to
Thank you, John. I appreciate it, the time and that. And I hope I gave you a little bit of information.
Yeah, great stuff. Really great stuff. Maybe we can have you on the show again one day.
Send me that friend request, and I'll send you some photos and some interesting ones.
Okay. You want me to do that on Facebook, Robert, or where else?
Yeah, Facebook. Do it on Facebook, yeah, because that's all I'm on at the moment. And my email doesn't work. I just use an iPad, and it's an old one, and it's it's all over the place.
I think we're friends on Facebook, but I'll send you another message.
Send me another one.
Okay.
There's so much on there, I can't keep up to date with what's going on.
Yeah, okay. That sounds good.
Anyway, it was great talking to you, and thank
great
you again.
Great talking to you too, Robert.
Have a good week.
All right, you too. And be safe out there, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you soon. Thank you for coming on the show and doing the interview.
You never know.
Really
one day
it.
You might come to Australia. I can show you around.
Absolutely. I'd love to do that. That's on my bucket list. I want to definitely go to Australia one day.
Actually, I was trying to get Arnold to the house because his Arnold Classic was in Melbourne in March. I think it was March 15, but because of this virus, everything was cancelled.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to get my son to go and pick him up at the hotel, bring him here, give him a couple of whiskeys and have his cigar and have a chat to him.
Right. That would have been great.
I could have interviewed him for you.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. He's my dream guest. I want to get him one day.
Good talking to you, John.
Great meeting you, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks to Robert Nalon for that interview. I want to thank my sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. And again, I want to thank our many Patreon sponsors who continue to sponsor our podcast. I really appreciate you guys and your support. If you're interested in helping out the podcast and contributing a little money each month, you can just go to our bodybuildinglegendshow.com website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you can't miss it right there, there is a link, and you can become a Patreon sponsor yourself. All right. Now, I want to read this article that appeared in the Muscle Mag Annual 7980, and I think it covered all the 78 shows. And it's called Arnold Came to Dinner by Robert Nalon. In 1972, Arnold and Franco came out to Australia to guest star at the Mr. Southern Universe and Mr. Australasia. This was the first time they had been to Australia. The promoter had organized the show 6 months in advance and had posters in just about every gym in the country. The morning Arnold and Franco arrived there was a big press meeting in the overseas terminal. I was out at the airport at 7:30 a.m. to wait for the arrival. The plane was late and we were all anxious to meet them. Unexpectedly, Arnold walked out first. We were waiting at another gate, and to our surprise, he was behind us, chatting to a few people. The first stop was to the press room for the interview. Arnold had arrived from the American winter, so naturally he lacked a tan, etc. It was February, our summer, and everyone had a tan except them. The interview was interesting. The press, as usual, asked the same questions as they do the world over, and both stars answered all the questions with ease and added a little humor to them. Both the boys stripped down to their singlets and gave a few of their best poses to the cameraman. I was standing across the other side of the room, and Arnold waved to me and said hi. I had never met him before, and I didn't even have a chance to say hello when they were hustled off to the press room. I eventually found out that Arnold had seen a few of my photos in some English mags. He was familiar with most of the boys in the game. After the press room, about eight of us went to eat at the restaurant upstairs. The 17-hour flight from Honolulu left the boys a bit hungry, so a steak and a light salad filled the stomach. They had another 600-mile flight to North Queensland, known as Surfer's Paradise, one of Australia's holiday resorts. The show was to be held in a week's time, so this gave them the chance to get a tan and get cut up a bit. The following Friday, I flew up north with a friend of mine, Paul Graham, a former Mr. South Pacific and a good friend of Arnold's. We kept ourselves entertained by quietly looking around the local spots and watching the girls parade around in their bikinis. That evening, a group of us, consisting of around 10 or so, went to a nightclub for a meal and entertainment. Arnold and Franco were amused by the Australian customs and habits. I noticed Arnold was drinking a lot of beer, and since our beer has a higher alcohol content than American or European, it hit him all of a sudden, not too much, but enough to affect him. The next day, the gym was packed with spectators and competitors from all over the country. Arnold and Franco were both on the judging panel. I noticed that Arnold was the first to finish the judging, which took about 2 or 3 hours overall. Afterwards, I sat down and I talked to a few of the boys. I presented Arnold with a sketch, a three-quarter back, that I had done of him a few weeks before. He was quite pleased with it, which made me very happy. The night of the show arrived. It was held at the Chevron Hotel, and the theater was packed. It was a modern hall, and it had atmosphere. The start of the show went smoothly. It was well organized by Bob Bruce. He ran the gym in the area. The audience were awaiting the guest stars from overseas. Franco was the first to appear on stage, and he gave an exhibition on deadlifting. He started at 600 pounds, which he did several times, one after another. Then he went up to 680 or 700. He impressed a lot of people that bodybuilders were strong. Both Arnold and Franco came out on stage, and they did an individual routine, and then they finished doing their famous duo. At this time, everyone was watching, including all the contestants. I remember before Arnold went on, he was pumping up backstage. Actually, it was a tent that had been erected beside the entrance door of the side. Anyways, I applied the oil to his back. It was the biggest back I had seen, awe-inspiring. It was like rubbing shoulders, so to speak, with the best feeling you can't describe. After the show, we all went out for a late dinner to another nightclub. All the guys could relax and go off their diet and have a good time. The night was long, and we didn't get much sleep as we had to arise early and leave for Sydney. We called into Arnold's hotel to say goodbye as he was flying back to LA the next day, and Franco was coming to Sydney as a guest star at the Mr. South Pacific. The show had been a success. Arnold made a lot of new friends, and it was a new experience for him. Over the years, I kept up my correspondence with Arnold, and I noted his improvement in the magazines. It was March 1974 that he was again to do a show in Australia. It was being held at the famous Sydney Opera House and one in Melbourne. The morning was especially cold, around 7 a.m. at the airport. The overseas flights always seemed to be early morning. This time, there was only a small gathering. Again, the press was there and TV coverage. Arnold always gives a good interview. From the airport, we drove straight over to North Sydney over the Harbour Bridge, just under the bridge to the left, where more journalists and photographers were waiting. This time, they took some photos using the Opera House, the venue for the show, and the Sydney skyline as a background. It was quite a cold morning over the north side. Arnold stripped down to his trunks for the photos, but he left on his shoes and socks because the grass was cold and wet. I brought my camera along, Mamiya RB67, to get a few shots for myself. I only got a few, but good ones. Everything was a rush. After that, Paul Graham, Arnold, and myself headed to Channel 9 TV station. Arnold was to do an interview on an early morning women's program. On the way, we called into a snack bar for a quick meal. We were starving, and it gave us a chance to relax. When we arrived at the TV station, we sat for about 15 minutes before anyone saw us. I suppose they were busy arranging a camera and a crew for the take. They also wanted to do a quick interview for the news, since they were the only channel to miss the airport interview. The news interview was quick, and they got straight into the women's segment. The girl asking the questions was about 6 feet herself, and with high shoes, she was taller than Arnold. He ended the talk by picking her up, licking his lips, and walking off with her. After the hectic morning, we all headed back towards home. Paul had booked Arnold into a nice hotel just 10 minutes away from my home, which was handy for me as I would be showing him around the town. At that stage, I had my 71 Corvette convertible. It had just been painted bright yellow, a real eye catcher. Not too many around Sydney either. Paul had arranged to pick Arnold up every morning at 8 o'clock. Arnold would have an early breakfast and they would both train at Paul's gym for around 2 hours and sit in the sun afterwards to get a tan for the show. He arrived on the Tuesday and the show was on the Saturday, so he had 5 days to get that finished look. He's lucky to have a good quality skin that tans quickly. The next few days were hectic, rushing around doing interviews for radio, talk shows on TV, etc. I took Arnold around to show him the sights in the afternoons. We had a quiet meal once or twice in the city, which was relaxing for him. I remember one time I parked a car in the city and we had a few errands to do around town. Arnold decided to sit and wait in the car. He said, "Don't be long." Although I was an hour and a half, and on the way back, I saw him pacing up and down, cursing me. He wasn't too happy, but he cooled down quickly. Saturday arrived quickly. The judging was in the afternoon at the Opera House in the recording hall. It seated around 1,200 people. Only a few contestants' friends were at the judging. It started at 1 p.m. and it went through to 5 p.m., arranging the lighting and music, plus a few other items. Arnold and I left at 5 p.m. for the show. Arnold came inside, and my mother gave him a cold drink. Some of the neighbors came in to meet him, all women, of course. Some brought their young daughters in. It delayed us a bit, but Arnold was his charming self. One woman said, "If I was only 20 years younger." But he was more interested in her young daughter. Only flirting, of course. Eventually, we got away and we headed to a friend's place. I was leaving my car in his garage and going in his car. I picked a nice restaurant down off the beach. It was 6 p.m. We had an hour to eat and run. Seeing the show was to start at 7 p.m. The service at the restaurant was slow, but the food was delicious. That was the main thing. By the time we arrived, the show had started. Paul was worried because Arnold was late. He wanted to discuss the program with him and his posing spot. The acts varied from jazz, ballet, to hand balancing, with the contestants posing in between, juniors, novice, and the open division. The contest was the Mr. New South Wales state title, with around 40 entrants. The audience was all waiting for Arnold's appearance. The show was a sellout with a packed house. The time came and all the house lights were turned out, but with one spot overhead on stage. The theme Exodus began. The acoustics in the recording hall were fantastic. The place had atmosphere. Arnold stepped out under the light with unbelievable gasp from the audience. He went straight into his posing routine, each pose better than the last. The audience's applause at the end was loud. He was called back for another spot. He held the audience in the palm of his hand. The charisma flowed. He had that magnetic appeal that only a few people in the world have. Minutes after he stepped off stage, the applause was still there. He returned quickly to the stage, dressed, and he thanked the audience for their response, and he answered some questions. This lasted for 15 minutes. At the end of the show, Arnold helped present the trophies, and he thanked the audience for attending. The show was a success, and afterwards, he autographed photos, etc., for the fans. A get-together smorgasbord was arranged after the show for contestants and friends. It was held a few miles away at one of Paul's friends' business premises, a large parlor pool hall. The food was laid out with lots of goodies that bodybuilders like eating after contests. A good, relaxing night to finish off the festivities. Arnold's stay on his second trip was only 2 weeks altogether, 1 week before the show and another after. He relaxed a few days after, and he prepared for his second appearance in Melbourne, 500 miles south. He flew down a few days before for a bit of publicity for the show. It was the Mr. Southern Hemisphere being held in a city cabaret. The press took a few shots, stripped to the waist posing, in the main street with a wide-angle lens to give the photos effect. The show was given a lot of publicity, and the cabaret was filled with tables, seating about 6 or 10 people placed all around the hall. The judging had been on in the afternoon. The results had been decided in the evening. The show was to begin at 8 p.m. We arrived early, and we had a table at the back of the hall. The night was hot, so we ordered a few beers to cool us down. After four or so, we were a little heavy under the eyes. Arnold was quite happy. Occasionally, people would pass by to say hello and ask a few questions. He always obliged them. When it was his turn to pose, he made sure that everyone was out of the change room because people bombarded him with questions. He came out and he did his posing, and then he did a routine to strobe lights, and he left the stage quickly, followed by a mob of enthusiasts. They all bolted through the door after him just to get a closer look. It took 10 minutes to clear everyone out. He got dressed and he came out greeted by a small applause. The questions were fired left and right and center. After 20 minutes or so, he left the stage. By this time, it was intermission, and he announced that he would be selling photos at the back of the hall and autographing them. To my surprise, the line consisted mostly of females, some leaving their phone numbers and names. I mentioned this to him, and he just smiled. The night ended late, and we didn't get to bed until early a.m. We all enjoyed our Melbourne trip. It was short but sweet. Arnold spent the next few days in Sydney before leaving for L.A. I remember one evening Arnold had his photo taken with Sydney's top football team. It was the beginning of the season, and the newspapers wanted interesting news. What better than Mr. Olympia playing for Sydney's top team? We drove out to the field where the team was gathered before practice. The evening was cool. It was the beginning of winter. In the dressing room, they were hunting around for a pair of shorts, shoes, and no way would a top fit them. So they decided to take a few shots posing, not flexing, around with the team just in shorts and shoes. When Arnold took off his top, most of the team couldn't believe how big he was, even though they picked out the biggest guys. He still dwarfed a lot. I took a few photos myself. Not many, because it was quick and cold and over in 10 minutes. One daytime TV program had Arnold as a guest. The program had mainly women as the audience, and they all lapped it up. His posing and interview went over well. He gave a few seminars around the local gyms, training, posing, and answering questions for an hour or so. The seminars lasted for about 1.5 to 2 hours. Before we knew it, Arnold's stay was over again. I drove him out to the airport and said farewell. 1975 was the year I was training hard, in good shape, and everything was going well for me. It was August, and our winter was finishing. The warm, sunny, hot days were with us. I received a phone call from Paul to tell me that he was promoting a state title contest, and he may bring Arnold out again as a guest star. I said, great. It had been over 16 months since we'd been out, and rumors were that this may be his last year competing, so it would be good to see him again in good shape before he retired. This time, Arnold flew in with Ken Waller. A quick interview and straight off to the motel. Ken was on his way to Japan to do a show, and this was a good opportunity to see Australia. I was training at the gym down the road, which was only a 10-minute walk, so it was ideal for them to have a few workouts, and it was right on the beach, a very compact area called Coogee. It was also a treat for other members of the gym. I spent many hours with Arnold and Ken talking bodybuilding, etc. There was a pool in their motel. We spent a lot of time preparing for the contest, tanning there. I decided to enter the show, and I started training a lot harder, watching my diet and working out twice a day. Most mornings, I would pick Arnold up from his motel, and we'd go to the gym at 8 a.m. for 2 hours. Ken would train with him in the evenings. At that time, I had a job managing a gym for a friend of mine, so I spent the evening training there. I did take a week off to fully prepare. Then I trained morning and evening with him. It was interesting to watch Arnold pose after he finished the set. He blows right up, and he looks very cut, which is unusual. In the early morning, his veins always seemed to be very outstanding, especially on his legs and arms. One evening, we were doing seated calf raises. After 4 sets, he measured them at 19 and a half, and he said he would make them 20 inches in 2 months. Ken and Arnold did a lot of donkey raises together, and they both had great calves. The evenings were spent quietly after training, just a nice meal, and the boys relaxed in their motel room talking, occasionally taking in a movie. The first time I asked Arnold and Ken to dinner, I went out that afternoon and I bought the biggest T-bone steaks I could find. Here in Australia, meat is cheap. It only cost $1 each. Ken told me that in the U.S. they would be $5 each. My mother prepared a lot, thinking that they were so big they would eat as much food as she could dish out. I gave Ken a chair and I forgot it was only stuck together roughly, and when he sat down, it collapsed and he fell on his ass. He gave me a dirty look as if I'd done it intentionally, but I didn't. Arnold laughed for 5 minutes. My mother brought out the food with the plates piled full of eggs, meat, and salad. We all got stuck into it. Arnold took his time as he was watching a TV program at the same time, and it had him intrigued. After seconds and dessert, we all sat and we had a rest for 15 minutes. Later, I took the boys into my room to show them the albums I collected over the years. They were mainly on the early bodybuilders like Reeves, Grimmick, Park, Arnold's early idol, etc. He was fascinated with the photos of Reeves, probably because I had so many, plus his original entry forms from the 1948 and 1950 Universe competitions, complete with his measurements. He said, that guy was so good looking and he had nice shape. Of course, early on in Arnold's career, he was influenced by Reg Park, mainly with the size factor, and only now he started to appreciate the Reeves style of physique. I think Arnold is very critical, but he's also correct with his criticism. He knows because he had to work hard to reach the top. He always gives credit where it's due. Many times he was impressed with smaller guys. He is a bodybuilder, not a big head. I remember when Zane won the Olympia, Arnold wrote and said, "I'm so glad that Zane won the Olympia. He's a fantastic bodybuilder and a credit to the sport." That is a statement from a man, not an egotist. The day of the Mr. NSW contest arrived. I'd been training in the mornings with Arnold for 2 weeks, and I looked okay to myself. I wasn't sure whether to enter the show, but a bit of coaxing from the boys, and I decided I would. Arnold had brought out some of his contest tan lotion with him. I got a bottle off him. I went home and I applied the lotion with cotton wool, which was so slow. In the end, I used a paintbrush and I put on a few coats and off I went to the judging. Being a contestant can be confusing as to how you compare with the rest in the lineup. You can only give your best, and that afternoon I did. After the judging, I helped set up the lighting for the evening show. It was difficult because there was only one light set at a certain angle of the stage and the posing platform was just right. After setting up, two friends and I went to eat at a Chinese restaurant in between the rest period. We had over an hour to relax and talk about the comparisons. The meal was great, especially after the hectic time we'd just been through. We arrived back at the show a little late, but our stomachs were full and most of the stress was behind us. The juniors were on. We stood at the back of the hall and we watched the show. Ken Waller came out straight after the juniors and he gave a posing display followed by a small speech to the audience. He had to leave immediately for the airport to catch his plane, and he only had half an hour to meet the deadline. He received great applause. As he left, I shook hands with him. He said, "I don't know how you went in the show, Robert, but all the best anyway." Ken was on his way to Japan to give an exhibition. He left his stay in Australia to the last moment. The show was in full swing, and most of the lineups and acts had been on. My open event and Arnold's spot were left to go, plus the presentation of the trophies. Our classes went on first. I was backstage pumping up. I was in the middle, so I stood in the wings and I watched the guys pose. A lot of the guys make the mistake of spending too much time pumping. They overpump and they lose it as soon as the cold air hits them on the stage. When it was my turn on stage, I walked out and I posed a routine of a combination of poses I practiced all last week. When on stage, you forget your nerves because you have to concentrate on your routine and give them all you got. Before long, our class had finished and it was Arnold's spot. The theme Exodus must be the most popular background theme to use to pose for most bodybuilders. Reg Park was the first to use it. And when Arnold saw Reg pose to the music, it impressed him greatly. Wag Bennett in London suggested to Arnold that he should pose to music, so he stuck to Exodus. The dramatic music suits his physique. Paul Graham was the MC, and he gave a little speech about Arnold to the audience before he went on and then introduced him as the best-built man in the world. Arnold walked out slowly with a smile, and he stood relaxed for a moment. Then the Exodus theme began, and he hit a double bicep pose and then a twisting back. The audience applauded and lapped it all up. I noticed that when Arnold posed, his eyes seemed to be half-masked. Whether he was concentrating or whatever, he was in a different world. The lighting looked good for that I had set up. Excellent for photographs. Arnold's routine was fantastic. He came back and he did a second spot. All his poses were different to the audience's delight, too. I was sitting in the front row with my camera trying to get all the poses on film. I didn't need a flash because the light was so good. Luckily, I got most of them. His routine was over, and again, he answered questions from the audience, the usual, steroids, sets, reps, diet, etc. At the finish of the show, Arnold presented the winners with their trophies. The juniors, novice, and finally the open, which I was fortunate to win, plus a few body parts, best arms, best abs, most muscular, and best poser. The guy that came in second won the other parts. He looked better proportionally, but he lost out due to his smoothness. After the show, a reception was held for the contestants at a nearby local hotel. All the entrants and some of their friends came along. Everyone talked about the show. Arnold was surrounded by girls, one feeling his thighs, etc. In general, a relaxing evening after a good show. The Mr. Australia show was being held a week later in Melbourne. I didn't intend entering, but Arnold persuaded me to. I shouldn't have because in the extra week, I gained 7 to 9 pounds of weight and I smoothed right out. The show was held in the town hall right in the center of the city. The attendance was good. The hall was a sellout. There were several other acts on with the show, which caused it to run a bit over time. Karate, singing acts, dancing, etc. A lot of guys from Sydney drove down to enter or to see the show. The roads aren't the best either. 600 miles of it. We flew, so we got out easy, just over an hour. It was a rush drive down and straight back after the show for the others. Again, Arnold was the center of attraction. When he arrived in the city, he was on all the newspapers and on a local TV program advertising the contest. One commentator asked Arnold where he bought the sweater he was wearing. It fit like a glove. He replied that he bought it at a shop in the town. It was a big make, extra, extra large, and the shop owner couldn't sell it because it was the top too big to fit any of his customers. So he got it at a special price. Believe me, for a super large sweater, it was skin tight on him. Melbourne is a quiet city. It's all set out in square blocks, and to me, all the streets look the same when you get out in the suburbs. After the contest, there was a reception given at one of the gyms. We got lost several times, but eventually found it. We were all starving, too, so it was a welcome relief to get some food into our stomachs. At these after-the-contest parties, they always serve the best food. Lots of meat in all varieties, salads, etc. The next day, some of the Sydney boys flew back, including Arnold. He only had a few more days left before he left for Los Angeles. He kept training, but only once a day, in the evenings around 5 or 6. I had dinner with him several times at the restaurant in his motel. He always had a lot of interesting stories to tell me. Competitions he had entered and people he had met, little things that happened to him in the gym, etc. I suppose I got to know Arnold better than most, and personally I found him to be a very interesting and likable person. He's a very genuine guy and generous. The people in Australia were very impressed with his physique and his magnetic personality. I read a few items in various newspapers and magazines written by women, mostly, criticizing the average physical, pot-gutted male and praising the superior physique of Schwarzenegger. And one woman said he was a credit to manhood. She only wished some men took more interest in their bodies. The day Arnold and I left, I picked him up at his motel and I drove him out to the airport. He said his goodbyes to all his friends and he was on his way home to L.A. Since 1972, I've been corresponding with him up to this day, and he's always replied to my letters. In fact, he hasn't missed one letter. I feel that he has put so much effort into bodybuilding in the last 12 years, and it was so demanding that he was due for a rest. He's the perfect ambassador for the game, and he's still promoting bodybuilding, not only in America, but around the world. I think Arnold has done more for the game in this day and age than anyone. I realize he's now getting into movies, and he'll make a name for himself there also. Maybe one day he might decide to get into top shape again for exhibitions or whatever. It's okay to see photos of him, but to see Arnold in the flesh is an experience in itself, after all. So far, there's only been one Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't think there will be another like him to come on the scene for a long, long time. All right. Thank you for that article by Robert Nalon, and that was in the Muscle Mag Annual 79-80 issue. All right, that's it for the show. We'll be back next week. I hope everybody stays safe out there. Keep trying to get your workouts in and just be safe out there, folks. All right. Take care. We'll see you next week.